Well, Manic Monday here at West Kent Radio. Listen, Needham, oh, get me teeth in, is with me. We're going to talk about retreads that don't work. Now, if you're intrigued, so am I. So, Delissa, retreads that don't work. Let's unpack that.
Well, John, I've been talking a lot about retreads and saying to people, you know, if you want to meet somebody, don't overlook the retread. And the retread is somebody that you used to go out with a long time ago, or you may have known a long time ago, who was in your circle of friends a long time ago. Everybody looks a little bit different 10, 15, 20, 30 years on. And so I say to people, go and look in your social media at who you may have known, think about who you may have known, make contact again. Don't overlook it. And the reason I was saying that is because often it's kind of unfinished business. Things that didn't work 35, 40 years ago may work now. It's territory that you know. There's a kind of romance in a way, and actually, you know, kind of all the memories that you've had before, it's like kissing somebody you know, really. So it's kind of just going back over old territory that actually is very familiar and easy to slot into. And for a lot of people, that works. But there's a flip side to that, which is there's a good reason it didn't work in the first place. And I've had two or three retreads in my life in the last year, and I've realized that the reason they're not working now is the same reason they didn't work 30 years ago.
That person hasn't changed, or you haven't changed, or...
I think that, well, neither of us have changed. The core problem that was always there is still there. So, yeah, that's retreads. I wonder if anybody else out there has had a retread.
Well, you can email me, studio@westkentradio.co.uk, and if you've had a retread and you're prepared to just mention it, then email me.
Let me tell you a retread story.
That would be good, yes.
Because I had, there was Eric the Snake popped up as my retread recently. And that was somebody that I had dated very briefly 30 years ago, who got in touch with me about 6 months ago and said, shall we meet up again? And there was a very good reason why I hadn't spoken to him in 20, 30 years, which was that I caught him out with somebody else. So, hence the name Eric the Snake.
Right.
So, yeah, that's and actually, probably unkindly, I haven't replied to his email. But
you don't want to go down that path.
No. I don't. It there was, you know, somebody who could be so utterly awful. The first, I don't know about you, John. What do you think? Do you think forgiveness is something that we should all feel, or there's certain times when forgiveness isn't relevant?
That's a very good question. I'm getting theological this morning. For me, forgiveness can only take effect if the person wants to be forgiven. And sometimes that's not the case. But if it is the case, I often hear stories about people who have gone and visited somebody in prison who have seriously wronged them, and sort of this reconciliation, and it's been a hard road for both to travel. There was in Northern Ireland there's been a lot of reconciliation. In South Africa there's been a lot of reconciliation, but there are some people you can't forgive, A, because they don't want to be forgiven, and B, if you try to forgive them, they're going to throw it all back in your face, and that hurts.
Mm.
You know, people can say forgive and forget. No, you, most cases, if you can forgive, you don't forget, but it's no longer a black blob in your heart preventing anything else happening.
Mm.
On relationships fronts, I'm sure there's lots of people out there who need to forgive me for being an absolute... I can't remember a polite word to say that, but, you know, going back to my youth... Young and inexperienced and full of bravado. Well, that's what I wish I was. I was just a fool.
I, th- think all of us in our younger days have been careless with other people's feelings, and they with ours as well. We don't realise how easy it is to hurt somebody, or how easily somebody can be hurt by us, or how we can be hurt by them. And I think it's what happens in life is the more you get hurt, the more you realise that it's not a nice thing to do to anybody else either. And live your life the way you hope to be treated. Treat others the way you hope to be treated yourself is very important. But I never forgave Eric the Snake because he never actually knew I'd caught him out. So there you go.
Yeah, that in itself is a betrayal that he was going behind your back with somebody else and was trying to keep it hidden. It's a good name for him, Eric the Snake. That's deceit, dishonest, and no basis for relationship.
No.
So you have my complete agreement in not going back on that. But what about, you mentioned two in the last year. Is the other one worth mentioning? Or
The other one's very strange because the other one just sort of, I often wonder if it's because I left him in the middle of a picnic to go and see somebody else that actually when he came back, I think, I wonder if even 30 years later he might actually have just been festering some sort of dreadful revenge on me. I don't know.
So let me get this straight. You left him to go and see somebody else?
Yeah, I was honest. I said, that's where I'm going. I said, right, I've eaten enough now, so I'm going because I'm seeing somebody else this evening. Well, so I was very honest, but I think
good.
He was...
You weren't being a snake.
No, I wasn't being a snake, but I don't think he appreciated that very much. But anyway, I'm just curious to know if anybody else has had retreads and whether they've been good or bad retreads.
That thing about going out with somebody else, I took a young lady out to summer school for an Italian music evening. It was boring as anything. Sorry, summer school, I found it boring. We're going back to 1974 or something like that. And this girl wanted to go, so we went. And at the end of the evening, she says, well, I hope you don't mind, but I'm going out with somebody else. And I just said, your loss. We got married a couple of years later. She came to her senses. So that could technically be a retread.
Yeah, it was. Well, it was, wasn't it? Yeah. It just waited 2 years before it came around. Oh, it didn't wait 2 years. It came back quicker than that, didn't it?
It came quicker than that, yes. Yeah. And, you know, sometimes people come to their senses and...
realize. But going back to forgiveness, John, I think that's a very interesting subject, and you're right that not forgiving somebody is ugly to live with. Mm. So if you can, and if they want to be forgiven, it makes you feel better.
Yeah, you can forgive if somebody doesn't want to be forgiven, because you can put that right in your heart. But I still think it's a two-way process. You know, people need to know they're forgiven. There's times when I've visited prison and going in for the first time, going through the clanging doors and that, and you're just met with hostility and that by those in prison. And then we were led into a wing where everybody wanted to chat. They were doing education and recreational work. Everybody was very friendly. And it's after we left that wing, we realised that they were all sex offenders. And you think, wow, you know, I've got to reevaluate this. They're there for a reason. If they were in the rest of the prison, they would be target for assault, even murder and whatever. Sexual assault and abuse is still in the news. There have been some people who have forgiven, but there are some people who are still perpetrators. And they've cost the lives of those they've abused. So that's a very hard topic. We're not going to go on that any further on that one this morning. Let's lighten it up a bit, shall we? With me is Delisa Needham, and we were just talking about forgiveness and experience in prison. Now, I've been told now that Delisa's a hardened criminal and has been in prison many times. And she's going to respond to that.
I used to go into one of the prisons around the areas of London to talk about... media and television production because they had a media centre in this particular prison. And I always used to think that it always felt like there was a vacuum in the air, John, because it was some of the women that were in there for 20 years, various drug-related crimes, etc. And it just you'd walk into the room and there'd be this sense of hopelessness. Did you used to feel that as well?
Yes. Always felt that more could be done for rehabilitation and restitution. But of course, people don't want to spend taxpayers' money on prisons or prisoners. And my experience was that there were a lot of people in prison who shouldn't be in there, either they had mental health problems or they were the victims. You mentioned drugs. Now, some people were drug pushers, but they were being pushed into being drug pushers.
Yeah. There's one woman there who was a camel. Was it a camel they're called when they carry drugs through? And she was just obviously a little Thai woman that had been travelling. Muley, it's a mule, isn't it?
Yeah.
Bringing drugs across. Not a camel, a mule. get your animals right. And it was just very sad, really, see somebody who's there for 20 years. Was the crime fit for the punishment? That seemed a bit extreme, really. I don't know.
Some would say the setting the punishment as an example to others.
I don't think that ever works, does it?
No. I think the question should have been asked, why did she become a mule in the first place? And it's the same thing with some of the sex workers that came over and ended up in prison. Because, you know, the crime was prostitution. But the real villains are the ones who were pimping.
Exactly, and also, everybody's guilty. If somebody is a drug mule, then whoever's putting cocaine up their nose is just as guilty as the person who's carrying it across, in my view.
Yeah.
Anyway, let's get on to something lighter. Let's talk about forgiveness in marriage, John.
Okay.
Do you ever do things that your wife can't forgive you for, or does your wife forgive your wife sometimes? They say it's harder to forgive the ones you love than it is to forgive your enemies.
In one respect, that's quite true, because you know each other, I would say, fairly well. You get to know each other better each day. I can get annoyed. A recent instance I will relate is that I was sending a note to my daughter on WhatsApp, and the comment was, well, you don't need to write that down, you can tell her later. And I went not quite slapping her wrist, but I got annoyed that I was being told what to do. And the other instance was I record my Sunday program in advance, and because I'm going away, I've got to record two programs, and I do one Wednesday mornings, and she was going to be out Wednesday afternoon. I said, I'm going to do the other two Saturday morning. Well, you can do them this afternoon. And I said, I have just said I'm going to do them Saturday morning. So
patience.
Patience is a virgin, as they say.
Very, very, very. But it's sometimes. But that's the closeness of a relationship, isn't it? That sometimes things about each other suddenly become irritating, and you know, other times not. You know, I think forgiveness in marriage really is essential when one person has had an affair. And, you know, you can either throw the baby out with bathwater, we talked about this last time, or you can forgive. And to forget is the hard part, as you said earlier, but to forgive is essential because your marriage is at risk. And
what I did, I just slapped the laptop on this sending the message thing, and it made her jump because she thought it was a violent reaction, which it probably was. And because of her experience on a previous marriage, she didn't want me to get violent with her. And I said, I get violent with things, but, you know, I am my own person. And so we had a long discussion, but it involved forgiveness and me being violent. the computer and she asked my forgiveness for being not exactly controlling, but interfering.
It's finding out what each other's trigger points are, and also there's the other thing, which is you can never expect somebody else to sing your script. Mm. People don't behave how you want them to behave all the time, and in relationships that's about understanding that we all behave, think and do things differently. It'd be very boring if we didn't.
No, but communication is the important thing in any relationship. Mm. You can't just sit there and bottle it up.
No.
We mentioned sex in the introduction and things like that. As a minister, I used to have to prepare people for marriage. And obviously things like budgeting, finance, relationships, sex and communication came up. And I said that to any couple, you've really got to talk about what you like and dislike. You just can't take it for granted, because what you've done something once, it's always going to be the right way. This young lad, very immature, went to tell somebody else what we've been talking about, and they came back to me. And I said, it was quite simple. I said, I like stank kidney pie. But if I had stank kidney pie every day, I'd get fed up with it. You know, and my partner might not like steak and kidney pie. So you've got to work at these. Oh, he says, that's fine. And he says, he's an idiot. Well, he was more than that, because after the wedding ceremony, which did go ahead, he ran off with the bridesmaid. So,
my goodness me. Oh, my goodness. Actually, at the wedding?
Yeah, well, after the wedding, at the reception, he...
Gosh. I've got one of those stories.
Okay.
I tell you in the next bit. It's okay. a fascinating marriage walkout story.
Okay.
Exactly the same.
We'll come back to that. And we've been talking about forgiveness and relationships and giving examples. Are we doing examples in prison at the moment?
I was going to tell you a story about a wedding that a friend of mine went to, because we were talking about forgiveness, and this is an extreme forgiveness story. Well, you just wouldn't forgive the person, the people involved, I don't think. So it was a sort of kind of big, expensive wedding that my friend was at. And it must have cost the bride's father, let's pull a figure out, £50,000. Like, ridiculous money, ridiculous money. And it was the wedding had been carried out. They were at the reception. There was a big marquee and tables. And there's probably about 2,000 people there, I think. Anyway, the groom is up on the stage and he's giving his speech. And the bride's father and the bride and the best man are all on the right hand side of him, right left hand side of him, the bride's mother and his own parents. And he got up and he said, I'd like to thank you all for coming here today. There must be I think there's actually was 1500 guests, and 700 of those I've invited. Out of that 700, I would think probably 200 are very good friends of mine. Out of that 200, I would think 50 are particularly good friends, and out of that 50, I would think that probably 5 of you are probably my best friends. And he's looking around the room at the receptions, he's saying this around the marquee, and he said, and out of those 5 best friends, not a single one of you told me that my wife was having sex with the best man. And
wow.
There was just like a pin dropped, and apparently the bride's mother just passed out, the bride's father just went fumishly red, the bride looked incredibly embarrassed, as did the best man. And he was a divorce lawyer, the bridegroom, and he said, I want you all to have a really good time today, I'm off. And he walked through reception, got into his car and drove off. And what he had done was actually annulled the marriage in front of all the witnesses, but he'd also made sure that he maximised the embarrassment and the cost for the bride's father and everything. So the whole thing was maxed to punishment level, extreme punishment level. Do we think that's a bad thing to have done or a good thing to have done, John? What do you think?
I'm going to throw that open to our lovely listeners and say, email me studio@westkentradio.co.uk and tell me what you think. Now, if you want to hear that all again, we'll be putting it onto the website hopefully this afternoon, as I said earlier, depending on how the cricket goes. I've got to get my priorities right. My own personal feelings on that would be good for him, but what a kerfuffle that would have caused. I'm not sure whether... I'm just trying to think on my feet, and my feet don't think.
Your soul does, though.
Yeah. What the heck was she playing at?
It's quite extraordinary, isn't it? His divorce lawyer, so he was very calculating.
Yeah.
And chess player, probably. I don't know, yeah. That's very clever thinking. That's so strategic. And, yeah, I'm kind of with the bridegroom, too. I mean, the deceit had been going on for some time behind his back from his wife-to-be and his best man. I mean, how awful would that have been? And it's the ultimate revenge, I suppose, in a way.
And it's no basis for a lasting relationship anyway.
No. So
some people have forgiven infidelities, mainly because they've realised that they may have contributed to the... whichever partner was looking for love and comfort elsewhere, but it's hard. It can destroy relationships.
I've counselled people who've the wife has found out the husband's having an affair, and he has been very sorry. And the forgiveness is okay. It's the trust. It's difficult to get back in. But that was 20 years ago, and they went on to have a very happy marriage, one particular couple I'm thinking of. Very happy marriage.
I think it varies from couple to couple, and their attitude to life. I've never been in that situation where I've found myself in. Well, not that I know of, anyway.
I've been naughty, John.
Well, I hear confessions on Friday, which is my day off.
Okay. So I'll come on Friday. Some would say I've got eyes bigger than my stomach. It's too much. It's hard to choose.
My late wife had a good attitude when we got married, because we'd be driving up something like Tunbridge High Street, and she'd say, "What about that young lady?" And the more I looked, the more I thought, no, I'm quite happy with the one I've got. I could always find something that I didn't like about that person. It's strange, isn't it?
Yeah, in a way your wife was just opening the cage and saying, you're free to go. But when you're free to go, you don't want to go. Because, you're looking and you're thinking, I'm very happy with what I have, thank you.
Yeah.
I think it's very, very true. I don't think anybody wants to feel that a relationship is like a prison. It should feel free, but, you should love the one you're with.
That's a good song. I haven't got it in playlist today.
We'll hum it. Love the one you're with. Forgiveness in marriage is an essential, isn't it, really? It's an essential ingredient.
Well, it's turning on its head slightly after we come back from our travel, because we've been talking about marriage, but we're going to look at people who actually live together in a relationship. Are there the same ties there? Anyway, right, you're listening to West Kent today. With me is Delisa Needham. We've been talking about relationships and marriages and infidelity, how can that lead to breakups. So we're now going to just take a slight twist about what about couples who live together. Is it easier to break off a relationship, or is...
As one example, out of all of my friends that didn't get married, a couple that stayed together the longest are the ones that didn't get married, out of all my friends that did get married when I was, 30. Isn't that extraordinary when you think about it? What keeps them together? They had two lovely children, and they both worked, and they made each other laugh a lot. And I don't... it's very interesting. You're talking, John, about when you get married, you see your vicar or your priest and you get prepared for that. And I think it's important to be prepared for marriage. We were just talking about, with bills and money and relationships and you know, living with somebody all the time and going on that journey in life and having children, etc., it's good to be prepared for that. Whereas if you live with somebody, you just are living with somebody. It's just a growing, organic thing, isn't it, really, almost? It's not like a commitment has been made by both of you. And I suppose the commitment begins when you have children.
And also that very little preparation is done for those who get married in registry offices.
Yeah, yes.
And yet all of these are marriage ceremonies are a lifetime commitment in an ideal world. But we don't live in an ideal world, and we know that.
It's like, you know, when you have a baby, you know, the midwife will tell you what to expect and help prepare you, and, you know, the hospital helps prepare you, because you're taking home suddenly this little tiny thing that's, you know, so valuable, so precious, and if you've never done it before, that's scary. Mm. And yet you do exactly the same thing with, if you like, the baby that is your marriage, and you get married, but you're not told in a registry office how to deal with that, how to deal with what that's going to grow into, and what the love and care that that's going to need in order to make it grow. So a registry office versus a wedding ceremony, when you do all that preparation with the vicar, the two don't compare.
And in one way it's preparation for life together, and you have to accept each other's faults, because none of us, well, speaking for myself, none of us are perfect. Well, I have been called a perfect idiot from time to time. And realising that circumstances, moods can change, tiredness, particularly if you just had children and you're not getting any sleep, that can lead to some very short tempers.
Yeah, yeah. And you need to be prepared for that and to understand it, you know, that that's going to happen, and how you're going to deal with it.
My son didn't sleep particularly well. I remember at 2 o'clock in the morning having to wheel him up into the village in a pram just to get him off to sleep. And we were both suffering because we just weren't getting enough sleep, because as soon as he dozes off, wants feeding again or whatever.
And
he's got 3 kids of his own now, so he's suffered.
But how you accommodate that between the two of you? Because, you know, now husbands are meant to do, you know, if the husband's going out to work and the wife is staying at home looking after the children, husbands invariably still contribute in the night to that feed, etc. And so they're doing that, and they're going off and doing a full day's work at the same time, and then coming home and, you know, the wife has had an exhausting day with the children and she'd like a bit of time off as well. It's about job share and how difficult that is on that scenario, because once upon a time, my father's day, in fact, I think my father worked nights probably just to avoid all of that.
Well, I remember coming home once and I had to say, I'm not the relief column. Give me 5 minutes and then, you know, feed the child, bath it, read it a story, cuddle it, but, you know, you don't drop everything as soon as I walk through the door.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, we're in this together. And it was rather nice because I worked in the village, and then sometimes they just drop in from going to play school and into the place of work, everybody wanted to see them. It was nice, yes. So it was a different parent.
Yeah. Do you think it was easier parenting then than it is now?
No. The reason I say that is because, you know, we've got all this talk about inflation and high mortgage rates. We got married in 77, got our first mortgage in 78, and the interest rates were a lot higher and kept climbing. 79, the 80s, it was really hard. Now, vegetable stews were not uncommon. And that sort of tension is, how do you cope? How can you meet the bill? How can you feed yourself? We were talking this with Laura earlier on. So when I see interest rates now gone up to 5%, I think, well, we had it worse in the late 70s, early 80s.
15%?
Yeah. But of course, I'm probably older than the Prime Minister, so he didn't know all this. He hasn't got to worry about money anyway. But that is a form of tension.
Yeah. And there's nothing worse than money tension, I don't think. Mm. They say when debt comes in through the door, love flies out through the window.
Well, we've made a conscious decision that my wife was earning more than I was. And when she gave up work to have the child, the first one, and then the second one, it was relying on my income, and we weren't coping, and I had to look for another job, and I was quite happy where I was. Mm. But that then led on to other things. But it was making those decisions, and going through it together.
Yeah, and learning how to very much live on less.
Yeah. Well, I think we're going to call it a day. So thank you very much, Delisa. We're going to talk about all sorts of things next time when you're in.
Thank you.
We're going up to the news with Randy Edelman, with a song about you, Uptown Uptempo Woman. And then the Pet Shop Boys with Opportunities, Let's Make Lots of Money.